Welcome to High ISO, the photography and business podcast,
where we talk about life as a professional photographer.
I'm Robert Hall, an editorial photographer from Michigan.
And I'm Justin Haugen, a wedding and portrait photographer from Arizona.
What's the show been like for you so far? Are you
good? It's meetings. It's what I do. So we, as a company, we don't feel like spending the 30, 40 grand or even more on doing a trade show booth as the ROI that we would want. So
we're hearing that a lot.
Yeah. I can spend that on Facebook ads and not only get way better ROI, but I can also see the metrics to go along with it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas here it's kind of shotgun approach.
Yeah.
So what I do every year is send out an email blast before WPPI, invite people to sit down, have conversation with me. So I'll have a mix of clients, potential clients, photographers that just want to catch up, but I get to touch base with the industry in a, I guess a little bit more of a, kind of like you're saying, long form way versus just, here's my business card, please look us up online.
Right. Yeah. I've wondered like how the expo is adapting to, you know, all the other technology that's developed, you know, for whether it be a company like yours or even the big camera companies, like, is that ROI still here? And it seems like more like a playground for people to just come see a bunch of stuff or see friends, right? And it's less about like them researching one specific thing that they might be motivated to actually be actionable and purchase on. And so
if a company has a tangible physical product to show, like an album company, for example, there's some value in being able to actually have people come by the booth, pick that product up, and flip through it. But otherwise, if I can feed somebody an ad, they can click on it, and it takes them exactly where they need to go in the moment, they're more likely to convert on that because they didn't have to go through their bag of 200 business cards, find mine, go type in the URL, and hopefully they land in the right place. Mm-hmm. And even then, I'm not tracking the metrics associated with the 30 grand that I just spent,
right?
To know that that's where they're coming from necessarily either.
Yeah. Well, that's good that you get the opportunity though to still find some function in coming here and working with existing clients, chatting with existing clients and taking new meetings though.
It's relationships. In past years, I've also done podcast interviews as well. We've had so many in the queue that I didn't want to add to that queue at the moment.
But, yeah.
But it's good to just sit down and have a conversation.
For sure.
What's the podcast world look like on your end of things? Does it help communicate your message behind your brands, or is it just more of a personal fulfillment?
It's a combination. It's meant to be, first of all, a source of value for the industry. So we're talking how to be a better photographer. We spend a smaller percentage of time specifically talking about photographic technique, but that's included. Running a photography business, similar to, I guess, some of what you all are doing, talking about workflow management techniques. There's a combination of things. We've done 360 or so episodes now,
wow.
So there's lot of content.
Goals.
Yeah.
It's a lot of content, but adding value is number one priority.
Mm-hmm.
Second is that personal connection. Part of the reason that I started it was because I came back from being kind of disconnected from the industry for a period of time after going through some stuff personally.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to reconnect with the industry. So it was a chance to have conversation with friends and then make new ones in the process as well. And then third is that soft sell for my brands.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll mention the companies. But I'd never want somebody to listen to the podcast and feel like they're just getting sold to all the time.
Sure.
Because then it takes away from the value of the content.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of how I run my channel as well. It's like focus on what you can give first. And just let there be a positive result from that, right? If you're giving out the best information you possibly can, then there's just going to be some good karma that comes back from that.
Yeah. I do believe in that. And I've seen the results of that, even when I was a photographer as well. I spent a lot of time helping other photographers with their businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And aside from just the feeling of personal fulfillment, when you get to help somebody else or teach somebody else something, I think it does come back around.
Yeah.
Can you give us a little bit of a timeline of what that your photographic career looked like and how that transitioned to wanting to help photographers and help them with their workflows with editing?
So 2001 or thereabouts is when I photographed my first wedding. And it came from just an interest in photography and frankly doing something different than what I was expected to do by my family as far as a career is concerned.
Yeah. What did they expect you to do?
Well, I grew up in a missionary family. Mm-hmm. So there's a strong religious background there, a ministry background there. And it was ultimately just not something it wasn't the road that I wanted to go down. And so photography was an outlet to do something different and creative and to play with fancy equipment. Mm-hmm. And so I shot the first wedding with just a cheap SLR, of course, film back in those days. Mm-hmm. And somebody saw, well, ultimately many people heard about the work. And within the first year and a half or so, we shot just about 15 weddings, but then the second year it was 30 weddings. So it grew pretty quickly. So that's 2001, 2002, 2008. Leading up to 2008, I saw an opportunity in the industry to create an editing solution that would meet my needs as a wedding photographer shooting 30, 40 weddings a year. The perfectionist personality trying to edit that many weddings is just a mind-numbing idea. But then I also saw an opportunity in the industry because there were only a few editing companies at the time, and their model was kind of complicated. The pricing was high, and there was also a waiting list because they were basically doing it out of their garage. They didn't have a scalable solution in place. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to create something that was scalable, that offered a solution that was more affordable to a wider range of photographers in the industry, and it was simpler as well. And so simultaneously, I had some personal goals to create a brand that was ultimately going to generate some passive income for me that wouldn't require my involvement all the time. It would give me more flexibility than I even had as a photographer.
Yeah.
And so that's where Photographer's Edit was born.
It's funny, I think a lot of people get into photography thinking that it's like this super freedom thing, and then you just realize that it becomes this, it's kind of freedom in that you can say no and keep a day open, but it's also, you can't really say no to anything, so you end up working, you know, excessively and completely filling your schedule. Like, a lot of photographers are overworked.
Yeah.
You know, they're working 50, 60, 70 hours a week just trying to run their brand. And because it's all the business comes through them, they feel like they constantly have to say yes to everything. So
I think there are a couple of reasons for that. I think one of the reasons that photographers tend to be overworked is because they don't know what they're actually trying to achieve. So we talk a lot about this on my podcast. It's called a Big Picture View. Mm-hmm. Julie Morgenstern wrote a book called Time Management from the Inside Out. And there's a quote in that book. She says that the most successful people in life have a big picture view that enables them to rise above the chaos and maintain perspective. And most photographers function in this kind of reactive mode where they know they need to make a living or at least generate some income. And they're going to do that by booking clients. And so they're kind of in this frantic mode of, oh, shoot, I need to book a client.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very reactive in nature in that they'll kind of try to get and take any and everything that's coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And because they don't have an overarching set of goals that drives a strategy, that drives how they spend their time, well, then they're going to work 60, 70, 80 hours a week, mm-hmm. or at least feign working 60, 70, 80 hours a week.
That's because a lot of it too, yeah.
Because they don't know what they're actually trying to achieve on a bigger picture level. So I think that's part of it. And then the other piece of it is just a simple lack of efficiency in the way that they manage their time, that they've set up their workflows, if they've even set any workflows up to begin with. So there's a high amount of inefficiency that goes on there.
In looking at people's workflows, what do you tend to see as like the most common inefficiencies?
I would still go back to that principle. I think principles, before you ever talk about workflow technique or tools to use in workflow, you have to understand a principle or set of principles that drives the efficient workflow. So okay. To go back to that big picture view idea, if I know what it is that I'm trying to accomplish personally, this is the amount of money that I want to put in my bank account. This is the type of life that I want to live. I know the lifestyle. I know then that I have to create a business that can support that lifestyle. And, of course, that business is going to generate a certain amount of revenue. Well, that means that I need to go after a target market that's going to be big enough to support that amount of revenue generation.
Mm-hmm.
And then within that target market, there are X number of photographers already playing in that space. Amongst those photographers, is there a particular brand position that hasn't been established, clearly established yet, that I can establish for myself? So now I stand out, I'm distinct. And then as a result, be able to effectively target the right client to generate that revenue. So it all goes back to those principles that drive kind of the big picture view that drives everything that I do. And I think that's where it starts, because that's not put in place. That's why they struggle. Beyond that, though, on a more kind of day-to-day basis, there is a tendency to react. I mentioned the idea of reacting conceptually or philosophically, but there's a tendency that we have as business owners, photography business owners, to just react to any and all stimuli. And a lot of that is just simply notifications on our phones, on our computers, constant reaction.
Mm-hmm.
If we get out of that reactive mode and actually be our own boss, largely why we got into business in the first place for ourselves, or at least so mm-hmm. I would think, then we have the ability to decide how we're going to spend our time. And that can make the biggest difference in the world too. So I think starting the big picture view, switching from reactive to a proactive mode, and focusing our time on the things that actually generate revenue versus things that have to be done in order to run the business, delegating that stuff to a team or to a third-party company, focusing on the stuff that actually generates the revenue, I think those are good starting places.
Awesome.
You've got a lot going on. How much of your time do you think is spent towards proactively working on your business and the time versus the time that you would choose to spend however you want to spend it?
At this stage, looking at the big picture, it's the vast majority is proactive. And I'm lucky enough to have a team that supports mm-hmm. that effort, right? So again, it goes back to the significance of delegation. If I was trying to hold on to a lot of that work, then I would be in that constant reactive mode. Mm-hmm. There's still room for me to improve in that regard. And I'm continuing to learn what it means to delegate more effectively too. I have a team and they're incredible, mm-hmm. but communicating effectively what it is that I want done requires me taking time ahead of time to think about what that thing is and being able to clearly communicate it. And then I can hand that work over. But I could stand to do that even more than I already do. And that would put me in a place to think bigger picture, not just for my one brand, but now a secondary company as well. There's a lot to keep up with.
Mm-hmm. Is that the app that you're working
on? Yeah, Milu is what it's called.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little more about Milu?
Yeah, Milu just very simply is a platform that enables photographers and then coordinators, event coordinators as well, to manage timelines and shot lists more effectively. So mm-hmm. I shot weddings for over a decade, and when it comes to creating a timeline or a shot list, you're constantly in emails, phone calls, meetings in person, mm-hmm. And then Word docs and Google docs and so many different moving pieces in that conversation. And we've simplified that, put it all in one platform. Right now it's an iPhone app. We're going to come out with an Android app later on, but it's one simple platform that enables photographers, coordinators to create and manage timelines and shot lists.
And so when you're here, like, what does it look like as far as how you're engaged? Who are you engaging with as a brand, photographers at the brand and Milu? Like, who are you looking for? Who are those meetings with here? What does that look like when you're at WPPI?
It's a combination of clients, of photographers. That Milu is a brand new brand. In mm-hmm. fact, I'm taking advantage of these meetings that I'm having to share the app with some of these people and kind of get their mm-hmm. feedback. Hey, what do you think about this? What's your initial impression?
Mm-hmm.
What do you like? What do you not like? There's something that seems to be missing there. But otherwise, it's Photographers Edit clients. It's photographer friends, people that I've known in the industry. I've been coming to WPPI since 2006 now.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's like a big reunion every year. And so it's just a chance to reconnect with old friends as well and then meet new potential clients. And then just the occasional kind of random photographer. I had a great conversation with a photographer today who I'd never met personally before, who had used Photographers Edit, who listens to the podcast, but has a really interesting perspective on the industry and the culture specifically, or particularly the photography culture, photography industry culture. And it was fascinating. We'll probably end up doing a podcast interview together at some point too. So it's really a mix of conversation, but it lets me stay in touch with the industry on different levels.
Yeah, it sounds like you're still pretty passionate about this industry, even though your position has changed.
Absolutely, yeah. There are times where I get burnt out on running a business in the industry, but it has little to do with the industry itself. The industry is incredible.
Yeah.
And and I don't know how unique it is because I haven't worked in many other industries.
I think it's unique. Like I say it all the time, but then I'm like, well, I haven't worked in any other industries either.
Yeah,
so I have no idea.
Comparison.
But I'm like, nothing's like our industry. I'm like, I don't know that, but
it's a small world, first of all. So it's mm-hmm. highly connected. I guess like a lot of things these days, but I don't know if you can say for the most part, but so much of the industry is so friendly.
Yeah, it really is.
Definitely think that. I agree. Yeah.
It just feels good to be in that space. Mm-hmm. So I enjoy it.
Especially like in more recent years, I feel like I hear people talk about
maybe around film to digital transition being a little bit more protective of information. But I think with like the explosion of the internet and social media where you can actually commoditize information, it's just gotten a lot more open and free, and people, you know, communicating in a nice fashion to one another rather than protecting their secrets and processes.
Yeah, less gatekeepers
yeah.
of information, people who are really just YouTubing. I mean, YouTube kind of changed a lot of that too.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It became this like open platform for it. So you almost have to be like polite to survive and thrive in this industry nowadays.
I think that's one of the cool things about social media is that it encourages transparency.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really get away with the BS anymore that maybe you used to be able to.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good thing. I experienced that transition personally of, you know, the old kind of traditional photographer, the film photographer with the old school business model to what it is now. And it's been fascinating to see that transition. And I think as a general rule, we've gone in the direction of more openness and kindness, an interest in relationship. Mm-hmm. And I think it's healthy. I think it's a positive thing. And hopefully we'll continue to move more in that direction.
I always think about like any bride nowadays could go online and just see like so many details for free about the process and financials of the industry.
Yeah.
You know, and like where does that exist? Like I feel like I couldn't go look up like the markup on an oil change. So maybe our industry is pretty unique in that way.
Yeah, there's a lot of transparency and people are packaging that information, trying to make it a product to sell back to people too.
Right.
Like yeah, they're gatekeeping in that way and that they're giving people this information and trying to monetize it. I feel like everyone's trying to monetize different aspects of our industry.
Yeah.
And that's necessarily bad. There's just a lot of ways to make money in, out of photography, in and around it.
So how much have in the past or currently have the meetings that you're taking with existing clients or even people that you're talking to shaped like the development and process of your apps and products?
Conversation's everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, whether it's a meeting here or we're doing a webinar, for example, helping new users of the Photographer's Edit service learn how to more effectively use the service. The conversations, the feedback, the commentary that we get there, I take really seriously, and I ask for that feedback even during a webinar. And we'll literally take that information, I'll go to my team, we'll have a during our weekly meeting and say, hey, here's this idea, what do you think about this, how can we implement this, based on not only this person's comment or suggestion, but then that combined with the feedback that we're getting through customer service, how could we most effectively implement this? And then we're very proactively making changes as a result. I think, and it may almost sound cliche at this point, but unless you keep an open mind as a business owner to the feedback that you're getting from clients, you're going to go stagnant and eventually shut down. It just is what it is. Things are changing. And in many ways, the customer is right. And so you have to keep an open mind to that.
I keep hearing how the camera industry at large is shrinking, but it feels like there's more photographers than there's ever been.
Right.
Do you see a growth in your business? Is there like more potential now for you to reach people? I feel like the aspiring level of photographer, the emerging photographer, is rampant. That's probably the biggest
class of photographers.
Are those people a client, a potential client for you to target? Is that happening too in your world?
Potentially. The thing about a new photographer and spending money on editing is they haven't quite put together the idea that if they spend less time on reactive, busy work, they can build their business. They haven't put that together, or they haven't realized the significance of that idea yet. And so there's still a challenge on our part to educate them mm-hmm. on the significance of that. Unfortunately, trying to convince somebody to change their mind, an idea is a little bit of a tough thing to do. So what we ultimately have to focus on more so, I think, is providing a really great experience to our existing clients, the photographers, and they will talk about us, and that's where a lot of our business will come from. In fact, the vast majority, when we look at our statistics from the last, at least the last 4 or 5 years anyway, the vast majority of our new business comes from photographer referrals. Second to that is Google AdWords, and third to that, I think, is Facebook ads now.
Google AdWords. I don't know anyone that's putting money into Google AdWords, so I'm curious to hear about
I'm sorry, I should add the caveat. I say Google AdWords. We have spent some money in Google AdWords, okay. But it's actually, in this case, organic Google search.
Okay, good. Yeah, good SEO.
And SEO is everything. Thanks to the podcast and all the show notes associated with our podcast right now, it's really helping us kind of boost our presence online because we have so much content associated with each of those episodes.
I call dibs on hosting our podcast.
That gave me good insight into like, I probably need to pick your brain about thorough show notes and like and the best practices, because I want to make sure we do that well when we start getting our podcast published.
That was the only way that I found relevance on YouTube, was really being diligent about keywords lining up with, or the best kept secret is your CCs, the closed captions on YouTube.
Really?
They actually utilize that to confirm the content within
really?
The video. Yeah, because you think somebody could type whatever the hell they wanted in the description, in the title, in the keywords. But yeah, if the language in your videos is actually consistent with the titles and everything, you get way more ranking.
That's interesting to know. Okay.
Yeah, so there's a little tip if you ever make a YouTube video.
We've made a few of them, but it's not ever been a platform that we pursued, but that's fascinating.
Yeah, and I had no idea, and now we're kind of like going back and like, oh, we need to put our own CCs on everything, because there's a lot of industry jargon that the automatic CCs just get wrong.
Okay.
Right, so you say like a model name or something like that, and they just don't have the words for
it.
So
We're thinking big picture, the systems in place we need to keep for maximizing viewership and subscriptions and all the different platforms there are, plus if we can leverage YouTube as well, you know, if we can feed little snippets into his account and that go back to the main podcast hosted on a full episode on YouTube, that the Joe Rogan model pretty much, because they've gamed that system so well. Like, you see their little snippets and you see their whole episodes too, so there's got to be like a way to get a good process going down.
And yeah, it's so hard to pick a keyword title for one episode too, so the snippets really allow you to be more specific in the content too. So yeah, SEO is funny, all the little different hats that you have to wear, and like when you have to when you're running a business and you have to kind of dive deeper into each thing. And
yeah, tell that to somebody who's booked 20 weddings for the first time in a year, and they're emerging as a working full-time photographer, and that they got to also, you know, figure out SEO and figure out social media and figure out you know, workflow. Like, there's just so much so many hats to wear.
Yeah, you got to have the years behind it, which is probably why you'd work more commonly with people who have already experienced a lot of that themselves, like, and realize that they need to get some of their life back, right?
I think the photographer that's been in it for even just a few years, especially if they're doing it full time, they're going to see that doing all of it themselves is overwhelming. And there was a UK-based company, I just read a survey that was put out recently. They put the survey out to, I think, just over 300 photographers or so. And the results were just, they just came out, and 55% of the time that a photographer spends in their work week is spent on editing. And when you think about not just the fact that they could have more of a life if they delegated their editing work, but that they could also actually put time into something that would grow their business, it's mind-boggling.
Yeah.
Especially if you're shooting, again, 20, 30 weddings a year. If you're doing this full-time, you're giving up so much of your life and so much of an opportunity to further build your business, to scale your business, by holding on to that work. And while 55% is the vast majority, there's still other elements of the business too that can also be delegated, including something like SEO. I know a small bit about SEO, but I don't have the space in my life or business to invest in really knowing what I need to in order to effectively maintain a presence on Google.
Mm-hmm.
So we've hired a company and they do the work for us, and just keep it as simple as that.
I'm trying to think of barriers to accepting the idea of using an editing company for the first time. Like, I think, and this is referring to my own personal journey and having images edited and relinquishing the ego that you have over your work.
That's the word.
Yeah, I think that's the number one obstacle for photographers is, and I know a lot of photographers who talk about how they love to edit their own work and that they would never use an editing service, and the objection is that it's not their work fully if they let someone else touch hands on it. And I see that a lot with photographers. So is that like, what's your biggest objection you have to, like, what's your biggest obstacle to overcome with photographers?
The biggest reason they say that they won't is because their clients won't be happy.
Yeah.
And that, but it all does tie back to ego. I mean, so part of it is, or in fact, a lot of it these days is that photographers, what they're doing in their business and with their photographic work, including their editing, is trying to impress other photographers and try to get the approval of other photographers, their peers. The reality is that if you're going to build a business, you need your clients' approval. And the clients, 98% of the time, don't know the difference between whether an image is great or just okay in its editing, or even its photographic quality. So the idea that we put so much importance on these nuances, like, oh, there's, you know, it was 5 points a little too magenta. The end client isn't noticing that stuff. So if the end client's not noticing that stuff, and they're the ones that we're selling to, then does it really actually matter that we touch it? If we're hiring a company, or for that matter, an in-house assistant to come in and do that work so that we can focus on things that will actually grow the company, is it really actually going to hurt our business? But most of these comments or questions that photographers have are not coming from a broader perspective or bigger picture perspective. And it is very much ego-driven, like you were saying. The notion that that somebody else can't edit just as well as us, that's an ego-driven thought process.
Even more so than that, it's an insecurity too. Like, they're insecure about the idea that their work being judged unfairly, that someone else didn't do what they do to their standard, or we have weird ideals about our own standards, and that someone else couldn't possibly, do the same quality of work.
Make
that
the call.
Yeah. And I find that, like, if when you're working with people's photos, and my process personally, like, there's style, and I think we can create and build our own presets and our own looks and apply that to a set of images, and the style is there, the foundation for style, and that when I'm relinquishing the edit to someone else, it's strictly corrective at that point. And correcting an image doesn't affect the style of an image to me. And when I'm talking style, I'm talking hue, saturation, luminance, split tones, and tone curve. To me, that's the backbone of any preset, and everything else is corrective. And I don't think a lot of photographers understand that. They think if you give it off to someone, they're putting their own style.
Right. All of a sudden, you're going to get like sepia tone back. And, something you would never do. It's like,
And we understand the importance of style, whether or not it actually matters that much to the client in the end. It does matter to the photographer. Insecurities are based in beliefs. And so that's a whole loaded topic in and of itself. Like, is the photographer willing to take a step back objectively and look at their belief system that's driving the insecurities that are making them do something like hold on to 20, 30 hours of editing every couple of weeks? That's a whole different conversation almost. But regardless, we understand that photographers like to create a style that they can call their own, and that's what they want to give to their clients. And so while we started Photographers Edit with a really simple model to begin with, ultimately we decided to accommodate the photographer's interest in creating a unique style and offering that to their clients. And so we've created a workflow now in the onboarding process that enables the photographer to do just that. They can share visually and textually what their editing style is, so that when our team then goes to process the order, we're processing it based on that information and matching their editing style.
And so fast forward to now, what's your team look like? What does that operation look like at Photographers Edit? How many people are we talking here, and how many people are they helping? And any one editor, how much attention can they give one client's set of edits?
So we've got, during busy season this coming year, we'll probably have roughly 85 to 90 editors altogether. Mm-hmm. The majority of those are focused on that custom color correction work. We have a segment of that team that's going to be focused on retouching. And then we offer something called, and first of all, any of the orders incoming are put into a queue, and the next available editor takes on that order, with the exception of our premium members, which at this point actually are a vast majority probably of our existing clients. The premium members can schedule their orders in advance, and those orders that are scheduled in advance actually go to a dedicated editing team. So you have the same people looking at those images, and that helps improve consistency and the final quality of the product. So that's kind of the basic workflow. And we're working with photographers mainly here in the U.S., but we also have clients in Canada and Europe and Australia as well.
Your editors, is this all in one place?
Yeah, so we have all of our customer service and management are based here in the U.S., and then our editing team is actually based in Mumbai in India.
Okay.
So back when I created Photographers Edit in 2008, my goal was to, my thought was I'll initially hire some editors. I live in Tennessee, in the Tennessee and the Chattanooga area. But ultimately, I wanted to find a company that I could work with, partner with, subcontract to, that was set up in such a way that we could scale the business. Because as I'd mentioned, when we started, the existing editing companies weren't scalable. They had wait lists. And I wanted to create a company that could handle a larger volume. I was lucky enough to find a company at that point that we could partner with, who was already in the image editing space. And so I created the editing workflow. They were primarily focused on Photoshop or retouching work at that point. That was their thing. I created this kind of, it's not bulk processing because that has kind of a negative connotation, but as opposed to Photoshop where you're generally working on one image at a time, Lightroom is a bulk processing software, if you will. And so I designed the workflow in Lightroom and taught that workflow to them virtually initially, and then ultimately went to Mumbai myself and trained the team in person as well. Now I've been, at least three times to oversee that process, go back, touch base with the team, make sure everything is as it should be. They work in this beautiful office building in the downtown Mumbai area.
I was actually curious about what the type of environment that is, where you've got 90 color calibrated type, that type of environment.
Gosh, I can't even imagine.
Yeah, I've never seen anything like that.
And so, by the way, it's in a dark working space too, which was kind of that was even a foreign concept to me when I first started in this, because even I was used to editing and, I mean, you at least have a light on somewhere, there's light coming in the window, but as anybody that's been in the photography industry for a while knows, you have that ambient light can actually kind of distort your perception of what's on screen. And then of course, if as you pointed out, the screen isn't calibrated, that can play into it as well. So yeah, you've got all these calibrated screens in a really dark room with editors who are, I mean, I thought I knew what I was doing, and here I am supposedly teaching them how to implement this workflow, and they're blowing me away with their editing skills, the quickness with which they move. And of course, they're having to process a lot of information too. We've worked with thousands and thousands of photographers over the years. So it's pretty impressive what they're doing, and we're continuing to try to improve logistics. I mean, managing millions and millions of images a year is a tough thing in and of itself, and especially when a lot of that's concentrated around the busy season, like September, October, November. And so that continues to be kind of an interesting challenge for us to try to figure out how to manage that workflow. But it's impressive what they've ultimately done. And ultimately, that company bought into Photographer's Edit a number of years ago. And so there are business partners now, too.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, the photographers, I worked with a photographer the other day. She came to my house and she had a calibration issue. I ran a calibration for her and tried. And you're only trying to get a calibration as close to baseline as possible for the variety of viewing environments you're going to look at it in, and then trying to explain the idea of eyesight being perceptual and that it changes wherever you're at. Like
subjective,
explaining to her that, you ever notice how you left the grocery store at night and despite being under those, what are those types of lights, the sodium, was it chloride or something? It's really orange light.
Yeah.
You still know the color of your car that you're looking for? Like, how is that? And when you're nitpicking the magenta tone of this image comparatively against the greener tone of another, but if you were to look at them all consecutively, your eye is going to adapt to that, and then eventually you're going to be used to the color profile you're looking at. Communicating that with photographers is really difficult.
Well, what's hilarious about the whole thing at the end of the day, though, is we're going to spend all this time and effort and energy trying to get this image just right on our color-calibrated screens, and then our client's going to look at it on their phone.
Yeah. In night
or they're mode. Or they're trashy
with night shift on.
Yeah, I mean,
or what does your phone look like? His phone is constantly red. Yeah,
it's kind of a hilarious thing, really, that we do. Again, that kind of self importance, the significance that we've given this whole process. That at the end of the day, doesn't actually. I mean, I still think about how I have a number of snapshots on my refrigerator at home. It's pictures of me and my girlfriend, me and my kids, and they're not perfectly color corrected. They're blurry. They're not framed or composed perfectly, but at the end of the day, these are important people to me, and I don't care.
It's the content.
And it is the content in the end, yeah, and context is a great word. And so we have to keep that in mind just to lend perspective to our efforts at the end of the day and helping us decide what we're actually spending our time on. It's not that we should compromise in our efforts at being a good photographer or at even providing a beautifully color-corrected finished image to a client, but we have to prioritize within that what we need to be spending time on. And it's really important to maintain the perspective that enables that.
It's interesting that you mentioned the context of photos on your fridge. I have a friend who entered in the print comp for the first time here and was mentioning being a little bit beat up about the score that I got. And I said, did the client love the image? That's all that matters. These people are operating under a completely different precedent and set of rules. And what you're trying to accomplish, and if your client loved the image, then you hit it out of the park. Be proud of that image.
Yeah. I let a lot of ego go the first time I did print comp because it made me realize the standard of work I need to start looking at my work at to satisfy me personally and professionally. The client's happy, that's the most important part. But like, if I'm really going to, if you're going to enter that realm, you better be prepared to hear very critical feedback and act on it.
Yeah, and I understand that. Like, the feedback's definitely worth it, but it hardly applies to running a photography business. Mm. It's a completely different echelon and like world, you know. It's
But speaking to what you're saying about the wellness of your life and all that, I think that's something that we should talk about more on this podcast and communicate to people that I think when you first start photography, your wellness of life is rooted directly in your love for photography. So the more time you're spending on it, the more happy you feel until it starts to affect. I've seen my photography affect personal relationships. It definitely crumbled a long-term relationship in my life. And, you know, as my photography became more prominent in my life, it affected that relationship negatively until we were no longer together anymore. I don't want ever want photography to take over my life the way it has previously. And, like, that's a slippery slope to navigate. And definitely when you start looking at services like Photographer's Edit, it's an attempt to reclaim that time so that way you can spend time with intention. And it affects your wellness and your mental health. And we don't think about that stuff often enough as creative professionals.
Yeah, it's not just a dollars and cents type thing. You really change your life by relinquishing some of that control.
Yeah, and control over what at the end of the day, too. Mm-hmm. It's just maintaining, again, that perspective, realizing that we're trying to control something that maybe doesn't actually matter so much.
Because you don't want that negative five tint on your magenta on 100 images that you deliver. Yeah. Where can people find your businesses online? Where can they find Photographer's Edit and your podcast and
your app? Photographer's Edit is just that. It's photographersedit.com, photographers plural, the S and the N, photographersedit.com. The podcast is Bokeh, B-O-K-E-H, podcast.com. Mm-hmm. And then Milu is M-I-I-L-U.com.
Bokeh Podcast, you have probably pissed off so many people who tried starting podcasts after you. That was the first name that they thought of.
That was the name. Well, and the funny thing about Bokeh is it's originally a Japanese word. I grew up in Japan, and the Japanese word is Bokeh. But if I was to pronounce it correctly all the time, I think people would be kind of turning their heads and like, "What are you talking about?"
Yeah.
So we just call it Bokeh, but it's Bokeh, BokehPodcast.com. There's 360 or so. There's over 330 episodes that have been published. Content, again, around photography, business, workflow, and then ultimately how to be a better photographer as well. So lots of content there. We recently started a series focused on brand position, and I'm doing brand position consults, how to create a distinct, clear and distinct brand position in your market, because there are a lot of photographers, I think we talked about earlier, there are a lot of photographers in our industry, a lot of new photographers that they're crowding the space. So in a noisy world that we exist in, digitally or otherwise, how do we stand out amongst that noise? And so we talk a lot about the significance of a clear and distinct brand position message. And so we've started a series where I'm consulting photographers on that. It's been a really, really cool series as well. So
I think a lot of people need to hear that, because I probably get more annoyed with people complaining about the emerging photography market more than anything. I had somebody in my photo group the other day who, can I rant? And he went on a whole rant about, you buy your Rebel camera at Costco and you call yourself a professional. I'm like, whoa, like, what are you so threatened by? It was very aggressive, and the group kind of turned on him. And I didn't really want to come to his defense because I agreed with their position back on it. But if you're so worried about that, you're not worrying enough about what's really important, brand positioning and making sure you don't, no one should ever confuse you.
That sounds like a notification I don't want.
Yeah.
Well, being threatened by it indicates a lack of understanding of the way that the market works, the way that marketing works. And, you know, if there are a lot of photographers coming into the market, and there have been now for 10 years, probably a good 10 years or so, just because the barrier to entry has been minimized, right? The question then is, how do you flex and flow with that? How do you stand out amongst this mass of photographers? And proactively trying to figure out the answer to that question or the answers to that question is a way more constructive way to spend your time than complaining about the people that are coming in.
And we should definitely turn our viewers over to the Bokeh Podcast to learn more about that.
And we can check it out if we need 330 more ideas.
Thanks for the shout out. Yeah, thanks for letting me do this.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's been great talking to you.